こんにちは and welcome to Japan Edge for all things Japan. This channel brings you the latest insights and stories straight from the heart of Tokyo. Here, I'll be diving into what's happening in Japan right now, exploring the trends, uncovering the stories behind them, all from the perspective of locals.This podcast is intended for those of you interested in Japan but don't know much about the country, or for those of you looking for insights beyond what the guidebooks would offer you. I'll be sharing with you some of the topics that the local Japanese are tuning into recently, and will also give you my personal take on some of our cultural aspects. So, I hope you'll enjoy today's episode.I'm sure your country has a national public TV broadcasting network, which runs without advertisement and is operated by either donations or license fee. Well, in Japan, our national broadcasting network is called NHK. NHK, because of its nature, is known for high quality and unbiased news and documentaries. Since they're freed from the pressures of rating-serving content for advertisers,They tend to create deep, often serious, heavily researched programs. But they have been putting great emphasis on broadening their program categories. And recently, their dramas and even comedies are, in my personal view, pretty entertaining. NHK programs are available for viewers around the world through NHK World Premium. You can find out how to access NHK World Premium in your region,by visiting nhkworldpremium.com. You will be able to search the broadcasting operator for your region. If you have any interest in Japan, I highly recommend exploring this because there really are a lot of good programs. Now, there's a drama segment called NHK Morning Serial Drama, a slot every morning from Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 8:15.So it's only a 15-minute slot. Now, since as far back as 1961, this 15-minute time slot has been allotted to a drama series that primarily feature female protagonists inspired by real-life women who have made achievements. One drama runs for 6 months, so they're all pretty long stories. A new drama starts on the first Monday of April,and on the first Monday of October. And this has been going on since 1961. Now, it's obvious that these dramas are primarily intended for stay-home wives, and nowadays also women working from home. So live viewership is not that high. But it is something that everybody here in Japan knows about, at least of its existence. And they've had a pretty good reputation for their quality.And recently, thanks to the streaming platforms such as Amazon Prime, Netflix, and of course NHK's own platform, there are more people enjoying these dramas. Last Monday on April 2nd, they just started a new drama called The Tiger and Her Wings. And today's podcast is about the main character of this drama. Well, the real-life woman on whom the story is based.The protagonist of the drama is called Miss Torako Inozume, who is based on a woman by the name of Yoshiko Mibuchi. She was one of the first three women to pass the national bar examination in 1938 and became the first female to become a judge. So today, I want to talk about this woman, Miss Yoshiko Mibuchi, and how she and her colleagues broke the social norms back then,to achieve their dreams, what the society was like in her days, and how the society has changed over time. I would also like to give you some insights into our society surrounding women today. First, I want to start off by giving you a brief introduction of Yoshiko Mibuchi. She was born in 1914 in Singapore, her father working for the Bank of Taiwan.This was a time period when Taiwan was under the Japanese control, hence the Bank of Taiwan was run by Japanese. When Yoshiko was 2 years old, her father was stationed to New York,
And since it was unrealistic at the time for the entire family to move to New York, her mother and the kids moved back to Japan from Singapore and started living in what is now Shibuya of Tokyo. So I think you could tell that she was from an affluent family. Now, what was more important was the fact that her father was a very open-minded person, believing that a woman should also pursue her dreams. After graduating from high school, which in itself was already a rare thing, Yoshiko moved on to enter Meiji University's women's department in 1932. This women's department was dedicated to educating women with commerce and law. Now, this, by the way, was the only higher education institution for women that offered legal education in Tokyo. After graduating from this department, she then moved on to enter the law department of Meiji University, which at the time was pretty much all-male institution. In 1938, she graduated from Meiji University, and she passed the bar exam together with two of her female friends. These three women became the first females to pass the bar exam in Japan, and they were officially registered as attorneys at law in 1940. Now, the situation surrounding Yoshiko wasn't all that great even after getting her license. Since remember, 1940, the year she got the license to practice law, was the year before Pearl Harbor. So it wasn't really a gender issue. I mean, the country was not in a state where there were litigations. People were basically trying to survive day by day. When World War II ended in 1945, all laws were fundamentally modified, turning Japan into a democratic country. In 1946, the present Japanese constitution was established with the principles of guaranteed fundamental human rights, democracy, and pacifism at its core. After the war ended, Yoshiko started working as a clerk in the Ministry of Justice, in the Supreme Court, and in the Family Court. And in 1949, 4 years after the war ended, she became one of the two first female judges. In 1952, at the age of 38, she became the judge of the Nagoya District Court. And in 1972, she was appointed the first female Chief Justice. She was appointed Chief Justice of the Niigata Family Court and consecutively other Chief Justice positions throughout her career thereafter. And she died in 1984 at the age of 69. When we talk about the achievements of Yoshiko Mibuchi and the other female legal pioneers, we cannot overstate the social norms that have been against them at the time. Women did not have the right to vote until 1945, meaning until the war ended. And during the time when Yoshiko and her colleagues were studying law, the civil law specifically stated women's inferior position as opposed to men. For example, Civil Law Article 14 was titled Women's Non-Competence, if you could believe that. This article denied women from executing any transaction without the approval of their guardian, meaning, for a married woman, her husband. It was only the domestic affairs that the wives were allowed to act without prior approval of the husband, because execution of the domestic affairs were considered to have been pre-approved by the husband. The law also said that the control of the assets of a woman would be turned to her husband once she got married. So, for example, let's say a woman had a land and a house and she got married. What happened was that the legal ownership remained with the woman, but that the control of the assets were transferred to her husband automatically upon her marriage. So, if she was renting the house to someone and was receiving rent revenue, that revenue would be under her husband's control. So he basically was able to do whatever he wanted with the money. So much for the legal ownership, right? I mean, who cares if you can't do anything about it or can't get any benefit from the asset? Other examples. Article 877 of the previous civil law stated that the children's custody lied in the father under all circumstances. So it was very difficult for a woman to decide getting a divorce, since that meant she would no longer be able to see her child. Article 970 said that the right for wealth inheritance was not given to the wife and that it was passed on to the eldest son or whoever male that was next in line. And because of such standards, it made perfect sense that many women saw no point in being educated. I mean, what's the point of studying and working hard if your assets are going to be in the hands of your husband, right? So in the morning drama, the mother cries and pleads Torako not to move on to university and tells her to just get married. She said that being overeducated would only make you unattractive and prevent you from getting married. Now, it was very interesting to see how Torako responded to her mother, saying that she could never consider getting married as a happy scenario, especially after learning how unprotected married women are. So clearly, her determination of moving on to getting higher education was something that required very, very strong determination. So what does the legal community in Japan look like today? Sadly, the current landscape of the legal community in Japan reveals significant disparities in gender representation. According to Japan Federation of Bar Associations, as of September 2023, there were 44,818 registered attorneys in Japan. Among them, only 8,912 were women, which means women accounted for 19.9% of the total. In comparison, approximately 40% of lawyers in the United States and 53% in the United Kingdom are female. Additionally, the gender gap extends to the judiciary as well, where male judges outnumber female by a ratio of 71% to 29%. Similar imbalances are evident in the public sector as well. According to the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare, women holding executive positions represent only 12.7%. This is data as of 2023. The underrepresentation of women in leadership roles is not confined to the legal and public sectors, but permeates Japanese society at large. In politics, the House of Representatives include only 46 female representatives out of a total of 461, constituting a mere 10%. This lack of female political representation places Japan at a dismal 165th rank globally out of 190 countries. The slow pace of changes at the higher level of the society really has various ramifications. One issue, which I think is a perfect example of the lagging old practice in social psyche, is the current law that prohibits married couple from having different surnames. Article 750 of the civil law states that spouses shall use either the surname of the husband or the wife. So, this means that a couple needs to choose one legal official surname upon getting married. According to the Ministry of Justice, Japan is literally the only country in the world that legally enforces the regulation of one married couple, one surname. Now, legally, it could be that the husband changes his surname to the wife's. But due to the long history of the women having changed her surname after getting married, it's basically the woman that is given the silent pressure to change her name. I mean, remember at the beginning of this podcast, we were talking about the fact that women up until the mid-1940s were legally defined as incapable human beings who were under the control of men. So obviously it was like, well, I mean, if you're getting married, of course your name changes to that of your husband. Now, if you're happy with changing your name, that's fine. But if you're not comfortable with the idea to begin with, the process would really be a pain, especially if you're working. Now, many women actually do continue using their surname for work, but your old name is kind of like a stage name. It's no longer legal. So you still would need to go through all the administrative hassle, like changing various company documents, driver's license, insurance documents, passport, and so on. I have a friend who has continued using her surname even after getting married. But when she was promoted to be on the board, no one in the company was able to recognize her name on the company's website board members list because all official documents do need to be under a legal name, meaning her name was under the surname of her husband's, which no one knew about. So her colleagues were like, hey, they missed listing your name on the board member. So, I mean, how weird is this, right? On March 8th of this year, which was the International Women's Day, 12 individuals filed a lawsuit against the government, seeking compensation on the grounds that the refusal to allow separate surnames for married couples violates the Constitution. Now, this isn't the first time such legal actions has taken place. Similar filings occurred in 2015 and in 2021. Both cases reached the Supreme Court, but their claims were ultimately denied in both cases. The timing for this verdict announcement remains undisclosed. But this time around, we're seeing various prominent corporations and business associations voicing support for amending the law. So let's see what happens. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Japan Edge. Before I go, I want to share with you a scene from the NHK drama, The Tiger and Her Wings, where the main character, Torako's mother, tries to convince her daughter from moving on to college. She says to Torako, "Smart girls will never be chosen by men. The best thing for a smart girl like you is to act stupid and marry someone who would allow you as much freedom as possible." I thought that was a very interesting line. Now, this drama is based on the true story of Yoshiko Mibuchi, and we all know that she went on to study at Meiji University and became an attorney and eventually became the first female judge in Japan. But you know, I think this was a common sentiment of many women in Japan. Come to think of it, my mother never worked in her entire life. And she was married to my father through arranged marriage. They met through some kind of family ties, I think, and they dated a couple of times and got married. To me, it's about seeking a balanced society where people have the opportunity to pursue their aspirations freely, both men and women. Hopefully, our society continues to make progress towards a better quality of life for everyone. So, thank you for listening, and I hope to catch you in my next episode. Until then, またね。さよなら。